So I got my Series 7, my 63, my life insurance, my health insurance, my broker's license, my real estate license, and an IT rate. So I was bored.
You're covered.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, I'd like to record the conversation.
Sure.
I'm not sure what the quality is going to be like, if it would work for a podcast, but it's a first try with this recorder, so I'll see what happens. Todd, why don't we start with, and what I think the best format is, I try to figure out what is a good story as opposed to kind of an interview. For example,
yeah.
You know, do you have
I'm not very funny, so just whatever you want to go with.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not very funny, so just go with what you want.
Well, why don't you tell me if what you recall about your draft day? How did all that go down for you?
You know what? It was funny because there's Craig Berube and myself playing for the New Westminster Bruins, and I didn't watch the draft. I didn't think I would be drafted. Neither did Craig. So I slept through it. And my billet came down the next day and informed me that I had been drafted by the Edmonton Oilers. So that's how I found out about it. I didn't really pay attention.
And what was your reaction when you found out you'd been drafted by that? What year was that, Todd?
Oh, 84, I think. Yeah, 84, 83, 84, smart. Mm-hmm. But my reaction was, at that time, they were the dynasty. To even be considered from that team as one of their prospects was just phenomenal. And I'm from St. Albert, so it was like going back home. And I got a call from, I think it was Barry, gave me a call and welcomed me to the organization, which turned out to be phenomenal because the next year I got an opportunity to go up there and be roommates with Andy Moog because they won the Stanley Cup again. So it was pretty awesome. Mm-hmm.
And when you showed up for, can you describe showing up for training camp with the Oilers? What was that first experience like?
Awe-inspiring, to say the least. I mean, that year, with Wayne Gretzky, Paul Coffey, Grant Fuhr, I mean, with the plethora of players on there that were phenomenal, just sitting in that room with them, you really found out what that word chemistry meant. To watch them on the ice, to watch how they interact, they all pulled together, and they just made you want to be part of that group. Plenty of camps where you go in there and there's literally fighting for jobs in the dressing rooms, out on the ice. You know stuff's going to go down before it even happens. But that team, you literally had to break the lineup. It was funny because coach comes in and he sits down with all us young guys and says, listen, I would trade Wayne Gretzky in a second. And our mouths just all dropped. And he goes, if you're better. And that just gave us the idea that, you have to earn a job, but they're a sacred group up there. And it was an opening, eye-opening experience for sure.
Mm-hmm. And do you recall in those first days any of the veterans, like a first conversation, or was there anybody who kind of, reached out or anything that you recall from those early days?
A few guys that reached out, but it wasn't shake my hand. So they had Dave Semenko, McClellan, McSorley, Archie Henderson, Mitch Wilson, so Al Tour. So training camp was interesting for me. I traded a lot of disc conversations, but not a whole lot of pleasantries.
And which one went down first? Do you remember? I mean, this is your first time.
Oh my gosh! No,
you remember?
I think it was. I'm not sure. I'm not sure who it was. I mean, I thought Tour and Archie to begin with, but I don't know who was first. That's a long time ago. I'm old now, so I have like some timers. It's not all timers yet. It's just some timers.
And which one was there one that was memorable for you for being in that camp and trying to show show your stuff?
Not really. I mean, it was. I never wanted to be a fighter. It was never my job in life. It's nothing I aspired to do. I kept getting put in that role. So when I went to camp, it was more like going to camp and being able to skate, because, you know, I could skate pretty fast for a big guy. And so being at camp and experiencing that level, that tempo, the passing is what, you know, stood out. Is the passes didn't bounce off the boards very much. They pretty much stayed on their stick. And, it's things like that that I took back. But then again, you know, that's why I went in the National Hockey League, because I didn't want to be just a fighter. I wanted to get my name on the Stanley Cup. I wanted to last more than, the average is only 4 years. Mm-hmm. So I want to be able to play and go. That's why my idol was Clark Gillies. You know, a guy got a chance to play and he had to be tough at the same time. Mm-hmm.
And what about, you know, something like nerves then? If that's not something you're even that comfortable, or not that you're not aspiring to be a fighter, but knowing that that's, you know, part one of the reasons you're there, how does that sort of play in your psyche when you're stepping on the ice with NHLers for the first time?
Well, walking over the guys that have done, and you don't know if you're going to, I know I'm going to be tested right off the hop. So, I look at the scenario, I look at the players out there. Yeah, you step back because they're the guys that you're testing yourself against. Am I in this league or am I out of this league? So that's where it becomes, not even really an issue. I had to just decide if I was going to go or not, And once you step up, I know not one player out there has won every fight. It just has never happened. So I never had that sitting in the back of my mind, like, if I lose this one, I'm out of the league. But I had a different mentality.
And what was your mentality then?
My mentality was that I was a tough, aggressive player, but I could also play the game. And so I hit everything that moved. And I wanted to make sure that the tough guy that was worried about his job, he had to come to me. I didn't have to go to him. I made them come to me.
And when was your, that's the first training camp. When was your first NHL game, Todd? When was the first regular season game for you?
Regular season game was with St. Louis. So I got traded from Edmonton to St. Louis. Went down to the minors. Actually, it was funny because I was going to be a cop. I wanted to be an RCMP. So that was my backup plan in case I didn't make the NHL. I was the last person to be sent down after everybody. They had cut the team for the last Oilers. I went 2 or 3 weeks after everybody else. So they held on to me for a while. I went down to the minors, and Larry Kish was a coach. And he basically walked in and said, well, you're not playing any games. You're not traveling with the team. You're basically going to practice twice a day, once with the team, once by yourself. And then we'll see where you end up. Now, I didn't know why they kept me so long not to play the team. So I called my agent and I said, all right, well, I'm going to go be an RCMP. See you later. And a week later, I was traded to the Blues. So I went from the minors for the Oilers to the minors to the Blues. Played a few games. I think there's 16 total in the minors. And I came up to the Blues. And we played Chicago for the first game. Got on the ice, and what a feeling. I tell you, it's hard to explain what 20,000 fans sound like to anybody that's never experienced it from the ground up. But overwhelming feeling. Just, I don't even know what the proper words are for it. But got on the ice, and I fought Mark Bergeron in my first shift. And, that solidified that I was going to be fighting a little bit. The second game we went to, we played Detroit, and that's where I knocked out Bob Robert. So I didn't even know who he was, though.
Sorry, I'm trying not to react to your story so that we can use them, but oh, my goodness. So that's fascinating. What do you remember about that game in Chicago? What do you remember about walking in there? What do you remember about coming out of the dressing room? Like, let's just dive down a little deeper on that experience.
Well, Chicago is a unique place. Now, I have to say, what an awesome time. Like, I missed the money part, which is great. I just wanted to play. But I got to play in every old rink and every new rink in my career. So, to start off with, we go to Chicago, and, you know, Chicago's was two stories down, so you had to come up all those long stairs to walk out with the organ blaring and the fans going just nuts during the national anthem. And, I mean, it was everything a kid could ever dream about, you know, going to the National Hockey League. You're playing, you know, Original Six. I don't know. The scenario just run through your head of what else could I possibly have, you know, go on during this first game.
And so how was the fight with Bergevin?
Yeah, he lost. So, it wasn't much of a fight. Just a couple punches and he went down.
Uh-huh. And what about, that's the first game. Number two, you're going to Detroit.
No, they come to St. Louis, yeah.
And Probert's there, but you don't know who Probert. Tell me a little bit more about the fight with Probert in Detroit.
Well, the scenario is this. Because I was not, your quintessential fighter that does, you know, studies the tapes, knows what hand they are, all that, I never did any of that. And my brother, he was a lot more aggressive, and he was drafted by the Islanders. And he was like that. He liked to watch the tapes and knew what hand they were and who the fighters were. And so I go out there, and it's my first shift. I jump over the boards, come down. Turn around, here's a guy who wants to fight. He drops the gloves, and he threw a couple, and I got him, you know, good to be lucky, lucky to be good. Got him right in the jaw and knocked him out. So I skate to the bench, and we're sitting on the bench, serve our time, feel our shame. We come out, he wants to fight again, so we go to stand around and go, who is this guy? Like, this guy's nuts. So we fight again, and it was that one was a lot more even. But it was fun. And so after the game was over, I called my brother up, and I go, man, this guy, second in the NHL, it's awesome. Yeah, this guy, I fought this guy today. His name is Probert, something like that. He goes, Bob Probert? And I go, yeah. He goes, how'd you do? I said, well, I knocked him out in the first one. He goes, you knocked out Bob Probert. I said, yeah. He goes, you have no idea what you did, do you? Don't have a clue. So that was my introduction to being a tough guy. And then I was a tough guy after that.
And your relationship with Probert going forward, was that someone that you had to fight every time you played his team, or what was that like,
that was back in the old school. So North Division was a nasty division. Everybody had three fighters on their team. It doesn't matter if it was Minnesota or Chicago, Detroit. I fought all the time, and we only had me, basically, as a tough guy here. Not until I left, and they got Tony Twist and Kelly Chase as a tandem. Every time we got out there, it was either Kosher or Probert or Secord and Semenko and Clark and Larry Plett and, I mean, Bob McCrae, Sherla. It was a tough division. It was a different, so much different of a game then as it is now. They were tough games. Like, if you didn't work the corner, if you didn't want to get hit, you couldn't play. So that was the bottom line. If you were physical and you earned every inch on that ice.
And Todd, what about did you struggle with that at all? I'm just sort of thinking of some of the interviews I've read, and I think a documentary as well on, you know, the fighter, the role of the fighter, and how that with some of the guys really played on their, you know, was really hard on their head and really hard on their emotions and that kind of thing. Was that something that you were able to just turn on and turn off like that?
You know, it is hard in the sense that you're only doing what's best for the club. It changed a lot in the last little while where it's more of a WWF type thing. It's all about me as opposed to winning the game. So we fought because we had to make the room for those players that could score. You had to watch everybody's back. Man, you were gone if one of your stars got hurt and you didn't take care of business. So I think the trade-off and where it gets really messed up in your head is the fact that you do so much for the team, but you're never paid for it. But the players know exactly what you do. So that was the hard part. Like, it was a complete camaraderie. You kind of look at it like, I guess, Let's say you go in the military, and there's these guys. You got a group of six, you got a group of 12. They're all watching your back, and you're watching theirs. But then you come out into the real world, and everybody wants something from you. So it's a whole different... It's really hard on your head that it's like, well, I've got your back. Why don't you have mine? Meanwhile, they're just taking money out of your back pocket. So it's that's the part that really messes you up because you've done so much for so many people for so long.
Now, what about relationship with some of these guys who, I mean, you played these teams multiple times a year. Was there this kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, but this... you know, respect amongst warriors, or was there a relationship off the ice? Was it, or did you have to have this kind of, you know, hatred or whatever you want to call it, animosity to be able to go when it was time?
Well, I don't think you need animosity. I mean, we just know our job, and we know that we're doing it. I mean, I was friends with a few of them that we fought all the time, and there's only a couple players that I don't like personally. So that's a whole different ballgame. But just a couple of the 600 that we're playing. So that's you know, that's it. That personality is personality. As far as the fighting thing is concerned, as long as you didn't poke my eyes out with your thumb while we're lying on the ground, I really didn't care. You know, it's after the game, it's like, hey, that you got me good. You know, or, you know, that was a great fight. Good job. But, you know, I don't think there was as much viciousness then, and it's funny to say that because there was way more penalties, but I don't think when two guys get into a fight and they're trading punches, it's as violent or mean as someone taking a stick and sticking it in your head or running you from behind face first in the boards. I think that those things are way worse than having two guys drop the gloves and go at it.
Yeah, I hear you. What about going to Montreal and with the playoffs coming? What do you recall about your first go round with Montreal heading into the playoffs, Todd?
For the first year, or was
yeah,
it
just well, like what really leap, what really leaps out at you when you think about your Montreal years and going into the playoffs? What that experience was like?
Well, there's a few different things. I mean, because it's a religion up there, the pressure is always on. And so we were leading into the playoffs, especially for the playoff year. It got so intense. The press, they could make or break your career just by what they wrote about you. The pressure from the fans was never ending. You tried to get a little bit of what a Hollywood star or some rock star would feel like when you go out, because you could never get away with it. There was always that, oh, yeah, I saw you play last game. Good job. Or not so good. But you never got a chance to get away from it. As playoffs got closer and you got into it, there was expectations. I mean, you sit in a dressing room and you have all the plaques of all the players that are sitting around and how many cups they've won. And so the pressure never went away. Well, the good part is that the year that we won the Stanley Cup, we were, I guess, third in our division. Weren't expected to do very well, but we had so many talented kids that were just coming into their own, or some unbelievably long-term veterans that were sticking around. And we just seemed to keep winning, and it got closer. You know, we went one round, went another round. We're always in overtime games. 13, I think, was a record for that year for the NHL. But the funny part about winning the Stanley Cup in Montreal is we go out there, we win the cup, and everybody's passing it around, and, you know, the cameras are out there, and you skate around for a little while, and everybody's enjoying it, and you come off the ice, we walk into the dressing room, and the first question was, so next year, are you going to be able to win it again? It was like, we didn't even get to enjoy it from the ice to the dressing room, and the pressure is on again. That's how fast it is.
That's incredible. And in Montreal, was there in the playoff run? Was there? What did you guys do? Were you guys put up in hotels? Did they keep you away from everybody, or how did that play out?
Yeah, we were, you know, segregated as much as possible because we were never expected to do well. So in order to keep the pressure on, we were, you know, put in a hotel away from everybody, never saw the family at all, focused on that next round because we were always the underdog. So it was like, okay, well, it's only going to be, you know, 7 or 8 more games at most, and we could be out, and we could be golfing. So what's another week? Well, another week turned into another week, turned into another week, turned into a Stanley Cup final, turned into a championship.
And in that run, were you guys able to, like, blow off some steam? Could you, as a team, you know, get a couple of cases of beer or whatever? Was there any kind of way to, I don't know, kind of cut through all that ongoing, you know, stress or tension? What did you guys do as a team?
Well, fortunately, in the place that they put us in, there was ping pong, pool, and we had the best tournaments. It was really team building. We enjoyed each other's company so much. Yeah, we would have pool tournaments. We would have ping pong tournaments. That was our relaxing moment, because the focus completely was on, and it was really weird. It was the closest I've seen that the unity or the chemistry being all together from Edmonton to Montreal. It was, it's hard to describe that funny word chemistry that comes across. They say, yeah, these guys are great on paper, but the chemistry doesn't seem, and nobody knows how to fix that. But when you were in the Montreal room and you're in the Edmonton room, it kind of all made sense. This is the difference between winning and losing.
And in that situation, that chemistry, is an individual that can just, you know, whatever, pop the, you know, the stress, or is it, you say chemistry, so I guess it can't really be an individual that's keeping it light and keeping people feeling good. Is it, how would you?
I guess the best way to describe it is, let's say you transferred schools and there's a tradition. You don't know anything about a tradition, right? So let's say they have a panther on the wall, and all of a sudden at the pep rally, there's all these people that actually go to it because you come from a school where they don't go. And then the cheerleaders are actually, like, really excited to be there. That's the chemistry. You can't put your finger on how it happened, but it's like a transfer of the energy to win, to go forward, that there's light at the end of the tunnel no matter what. I mean, every cliche you can talk about, but that's the chemistry part. So when you take a hockey team, from the veterans to the rookies, everybody bought into, we can win the next game. Everybody did. It wasn't, I'm not getting my ice time. There was, you know, if you would have blocked me on that last one, or the coach isn't playing, no matter what negativity you can throw in there, it's actually gone. That's the chemistry you're looking for, because you win in spite of coaching, because the players have to do it. All they do at that point, once you have that chemistry, they just, you know, make a few decisions during the game and change the lines. Because the team is completely focused on winning that game and taking care of your 30, 45-second shift.
And, you know, what would you predict for this year? Like, what do you see is probably going on in Montreal, knowing what you know about that city?
Well, I think Montreal has a very, very good team. They got phenomenal goaltending, structurally from beginning to end. They have everything capable to win the Stanley Cup. Although, I do want to say that this is one of the tightest races I've seen collectively for all the teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs right now, how balanced all these teams are. I think that it's going to really come down to that dressing room and how they do it. Because your goal scorer's got to score goals, and somebody that doesn't has to throw one in. Everybody has to hit. Like I keep saying, there's 4 skills to this game. There's skating, shooting, passing, and checking. And if you notice the way that they play playoff hockey compared to regular season hockey, it's night and day. So you'll see some teams step up to that and have all 4 skills, and some teams that just won't get involved and are always on the perimeter, and they'll walk away. But I think Montreal very definitely has a team capable to do whatever they want.
And what would you, uh, And what about when you're okay? So what was your role in Montreal on that playoff run? Because there wouldn't have been you were the I can't remember back in '93.
Yeah, not much in playoffs. So what happened in that run? I broke my hand 2.5 weeks before 3 weeks, 3 weeks before the end of the regular season. And they wouldn't allow me not to play. And I had to keep protecting everybody. So I busted my hand about 6 or 7 times leading up to the playoffs. We started off with the Nordique in the first, and I got a chance to dress for that. I think 1 or 2 games in there. But I couldn't hold my stick. I had to tape my bottom hand, my right hand, onto the stick just to keep it in my hand. So then they changed out, because I basically couldn't play. And I got to practice and watch as it went through, but ended up having screws and wires and pins in my last 2 digits on my right hand reconstructed at the end of the season so that I could continue playing. Which the doctor asked me, he says, do you want to open your hand completely or make a fist? And I said, well, I'll make a fist.
Yeah, that's
you got to make those choices in life, right?
Oh, that's good. Listen, Todd, I'm going to wrap up here because these are the kind of the things I wanted to hit on, and I'll be able to pull out the card here on this recorder and see how it sounds. But let me jot down your email so that I can just follow up, and okay. hopefully we can do this again.
Yeah, anytime you want.
Yeah, these are really great stories, by the way, Todd. These are really fascinating.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's Todd at UNRealtyGroup.com.
Todd at
UNRealtyGroup.com.
Okay. How's the real estate market down there?
My wife and I have been doing this 15 years, and we do about $20 million a year average, and we're always busy.
Wow.
But we're both workaholics, so it kind of helps.
Is that right?
Yeah, we work 7 days a week. We don't stop. We sell everything from commercial to horse property to residential to investments. So, like, we just got a deal where this complex is giving us 120 units to sell, townhomes. So, now we always set worth $17 million right on itself. But no, we work. We like to work.
And I'm just.